Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, and thank you for tuning in once again. Today we have Teju Oye joining us, and I just had such a great time chatting with her. As a woman, a leader, an entrepreneur, she just is literally spot on. I mean, I don't know who I am to decide who's spot on and who's not, but in my experience building, selling a company, this woman really knows what she's talking about. We had an incredible discussion of her journey going from corporate to starting several businesses and exact issues that she faced, the way she overcame them, how she approaches business, the mindset, and all of the things that have created so much success in her life. She's currently the president of SALT, and it is a group that helps people build and design and market their company, figure out their plans, implement marketing strategies that work. She's shifted over recently to training and teaching an 8-week program. You can check her out at SALTE.io. She's also the founder of a new company called Bliss Brands, B-L-I-S. She is taking a new business and figuring out how to bring wellness, all the different alternative cares into one website. Again, she's just a woman on the move. She's got a lot going on. Great conversation. I really encourage anybody who is starting a business, mid-size, scaling. She just hit every single point. So many great lessons in this for anybody who's thinking about a business. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you like today's show. Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Today we have Teju Oye joining us. Hey, Teju, how are you?
Hi, Laura. How are you?
I am great. As you said, happy Wednesday. We jumped on this phone call and she right away said happy Wednesday, which is one of my favorites. I forbid the hump Wednesday concept in my life.
Yes, every day, happy, happy, just enjoying life, enjoying the week.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, for those of you who haven't checked her out today, we're really going to walk through the life of somebody who has been in business, both on the corporate end, serial entrepreneurship, teaches this now. And I just think for anybody who is thinking about making that leap or has made the leap, got questions, like this is definitely the episode for you. But if you wouldn't mind, Teju, take us back to you were in corporate at the beginning, which I find refreshing difference from a lot of the people who come on this show, who maybe have been at this, you know, the writing life or have been entrepreneurs for most of their life or what have you, or they sold the company, ended up in corporate. So you start in corporate. What did that experience help you with? What were the things about starting in a corporate environment first? Because, you know, a lot of people want to just like jump into entrepreneurship right away. What was the benefit of beginning there?
Absolutely. So, you know, I grew up really from a family who academia, it was, you know, go to school and get your master's or PhD and then get a corporate job and stay at that corporate job, you know, for until retirement. So that was really the path that was the path I knew. So, you know, I went to school, did that, you know, did a quick stint in my master's program, ended up leaving it when I decided to start my business. But, you know, that corporate ground really helped me to understand the inner workings of a business. So I went from, you know, working in a big health insurance company early on in my career. And it was funny, each company I went to got smaller and smaller. And I look back on that, I had no clue. You know, it's so funny, hindsight of 2020, I look back on that and I realized that it was really preparing me to be an entrepreneur. You know, so going from a business where you have a corporate card, your flights are paid for, to going to an early stage startup. So it was one of the first, I think it was employee number 12 or 13 at a health and wellness startup in Seattle. And, you know, I think about walking in my first day there, I'd come from a company where we had a corporate card and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the CEO and like a couple of developers were like huddled in room working on the website. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, where is the admin? What is going on? You know, what is, and at that company, I got to see really how to grow a business. And, you know, I must say at times that transition, the mindset, the thinking was painful at first. My first couple months there, I mean, I was asked to do things that I had no experience or probably no business doing, you know, like, hey, we need you to help on the back end of the website and use HTML and CSS to build this page. Like I didn't even know what HTML was. I literally had to Google it. So I got thrown into the deep end, and you know, it really pushed my limits and helped me to figure out that, you know, there are ways to learn on your feet and to really push yourself so you can be in the position to produce. And that is what is so important.
Yeah, I love this point. I just wanted to, I don't mean to interrupt, but it's like you're saying something here that I think is so important and so, I mean, we haven't talked about it on this show, and I don't believe it's talked about that often. I would hire people into our company and I would say, if you want everything to be the same Monday through Friday, don't work here. If you are like, if you're looking for like everything to work well, don't work here. Like we are figuring this stuff out as we go, you know, and like we may change our mind, although we have our strategy all locked in, we might pivot mid-quarter and just wake up the next day and do it totally differently. And if that bothers you, don't work here. And so, like the benefit of corporate is that it's all ticked and tied, locked in. It's bureaucratic and people don't like certain parts about it, but everything is in motion, right? All the systems are in play. Nobody's asking you to, you know, learn HTML out of the blue. And I think your point that I would love for people to think about, or at least experience to some degree before starting a business, is that for you? Like, right? Like it's a real moment about, I didn't know I had it in me. When faced with those challenges, do you jump on the internet, learn HTML and figure it out? Or are you just like, this is absurd. I don't want to do this.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I think that that's, especially for, you know, any entrepreneur, that is the biggest question. And, you know, do you have the resilience? Do you have the curiosity to constantly be solving problems as they come up? And, you know, are you able to work through that, and you know, from a place of confidence, confidence in the face of uncertainty? And, you know, I think that what corporate taught me was, you know, here's how a big buttoned up company runs. Here's the systems. I think about the endless documentation, which at the time I found completely insane. I was like, this is so ridiculous. We have to send these like pieces of paper in to get anything done around here, you know? And I didn't understand why that was. But as I, you know, worked for progressively smaller companies, and I think about the startup I worked at, when I first walked in the door, there wasn't an intranet. There was no documentation, you know, so it helped, because I had that big company experience, it helped me say, okay, right now we're in this like muck of just people kind of doing things to get things done. But because I've worked for a large corporation, like here's the way that things should be. And it's helped me now with Salt Group, you know, my agency, is from day one, I've said, okay, I know the execution that's required to keep a startup running and to drive revenue. But I also know how this should look. I know we should have an intranet. I know we should have documentation. I know that we should have an onboarding hiring process. And I don't know if those two gaps would have connected had I not had, you know, a corporate experience in different types of companies leading up to working for that startup.
Look, I did not have the corporate experience. And I'm going to tell you firsthand, like, I think I mentor entrepreneurs, and I think this is one of the biggest fallacies that all of us hate that paperwork. We all loathe it. Yeah. And you're in the corporate environment, or you're anywhere and you have to go through 10 steps. When you're not the one who set it up, you think it's ridiculous. But when you're the one in the back end who set it up, you're like, you don't understand how complicated it is to get this one request done. And, you know, I tried to create my business with close to zero of that. And I suddenly found myself growing and getting my ass handed to me, because you absolutely need it.
Exactly.
And now my advice to entrepreneurs is, you know, start off at the beginning with a huge HR manual.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. HR manual and intranet. I mean, I used to scoff at the intranet at the big company. Now I'm like, before I launch anything, one of the first things I do is to use a software called Igloo to set up an intranet. And if your goal is to build a big business, some people, you know, they want to just be sole entrepreneurs, call the shots, take on a few clients or whatever business they're in. And that for them is a happy, rich life. I'm all for that. But if you're looking to build a big business, you need those systems to be in place so that you as an entrepreneur can scale yourself out of the business and focus on, you know, vision, growth, and you know, adding value to the world in the way that you see you're supposed to add value, the way that you feel like you're supposed to add value. You cannot do that if you're stuck dealing with HR crises, you're stuck, you know, dealing with financial crises because you do not have any processes in place. And your team cannot help you execute your vision without those processes in place. You know, you're leaving your team left, you're leaving them floundering because they have no idea specifically how to execute things. So it's the boring details. I think like 90% of business is in the boring details, you know, but if you can master those, then you're able to add value to people in such an impactful way versus, you know, kind of like running around with your head chopped off because you don't have the systems in place or you don't want to. I meet a lot of entrepreneurs who are like, you know, I don't want to do that. That's too corporate. Like, you know, you don't have to do it in the same way that maybe a Fortune 500 company does it in terms of setting up documentations and systems. You can add your own zip and zest, but know that by doing that, you're creating a bigger, better, stronger company.
Well, I think you like said something in passing that I just want to come back to that is the key. It's not about becoming corporate. You have a choice. Do you want to, in your words, you said to scale out of the business, meaning, right? Like, do you want to stop doing all the day-to-day grunge grind? And so you either scale out of the business and the business can actually run and function and you can grow and keep developing and doing more and more interesting, cool things, selling and, you know, building this business, or you can be a chicken with your head cut off, like you're said, right? And I really think, isn't that the question in the end?
Right. It really is. And, you know, I will say that for me, a turning point in my business was deciding that I did not want to, you know, it wasn't, at one point, it wasn't a happy Wednesday. Let's put it that way. You know, I was like, I'm doing all of this stuff. I'm on these calls that I should not have no business being on. You know, I realized that I had a control issue and, you know, that was preventing me from doing the work that I wanted to do. You know, I felt like I needed to be involved in every detail. I had not properly documented things, even though I knew that that needed to be done. There was something holding me back from really stepping into being, you know, a bigger business. So
it's your baby, right? Like nobody wants to let go of the grip.
No one wants to let go. They fear, you know, what they're going to lose versus thinking about when you shift your mindset to say, hey, if I set these systems up in place, if I'm not on every client call, if I'm not filling out every single documentation, if I get a virtual assistant, think about all the other things that I can do, you know, and for me, it was, you know, this would free up my time to actually launch new businesses and new opportunities, which I love. You know, I if I could launch a new business every month, I probably would, you know, so it's freed me up to actually be able to do that, to dabble into new endeavors and to show up in the way that I feel like I was, you know, put here on this earth to show up. Whereas before I was spending 8 hours a day doing, you know, really like $10 an hour tasks. And if I want to be, you know, the entrepreneur I want to be, I can't be stuck sending out auto emails or things like that. I need to be working on vision and revenue.
This is such a challenge, I think, for small solo to five, six people. You can't afford to pull out at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's this strange idea that at the beginning, people are already, you know, trying to source everything out and, you know, they don't have the cash flow for it. And how do you think about that tipping point where you start to pull yourself out?
Right. What I do, and I forget who said this, so I'm stealing this from someone. They said, you know, you've got to start firing yourself very quickly, fire yourself from tasks that you have no business doing. So at the beginning, you know, for any business, you know, for, especially for Soul Group, I was doing everything. I was billing, I was, you know, HR, I was the marketing person, I was dealing client support, I was doing everything. And I think that, you know, and I started Soul Group with no money at all. And I think that for most entrepreneurs, even if you have money or an investment, that is very much the case. And I do think that that period, you know, I call it the roll up your sleeves period, is important because it helps you to really understand what your customers want, the problems that you're solving, the bottlenecks in your business, you know, hidden opportunities that if you just scaled yourself out and were very laissez-faire from the beginning, you would not understand these things.
Right.
But very quickly, you need to fire yourself from non-revenue generating tasks. So what I actually do is I make a list when I'm in that roll up your sleeves period. I start making a list of all the non-revenue generating tasks that I'm doing. And, you know, I look at the ones that I can start to outsource pretty quickly, you know, leveraging videos and training the right person. And I literally cross these things off like pen and paper style and say, okay, great. So I was spending 3 hours on my bookkeeping every week or something like that. Who can I outsource that to? So for example, one of the early things I did for our business was outsource our bookkeeping to bench.co. And that freed up a ton of time for me right off the bat. You know, so it doesn't happen all right away, but as you are bringing in money, you want to start looking back at that list of non-revenue generating tasks and start to think about, you know, what's the most effective way for me to outsource this or bring someone in or develop a process, you know, in order to get this done. And a lot of times too, you've got to look at some of the tasks that are on that list and say, does this even need to be done? You know, there's a lot of things that, especially when you're in that employee mindset or that freelancer mindset, you know, there's things that you are doing that, you know, make no sense at all. So you want to really objectively look at those tasks and say, you know, is there software that could automate this? Or should we even be doing this? Like, is this, does this add any value to anyone at all? Or, you know, internally, externally?
Right. I'm just in love with my own idea, but it's not working.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not
working. And you then went on to say afterwards that, you know, as you extricated yourself, you're scaling yourself out of the business, what you really love in the end is new ideas, and you could do that all day long. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, right, I feel that there's this sort of infant to adulthood as an entrepreneur. And in your infancy, you're doing all of it. And in part, that's great because you're figuring out what you're good at, what you're not good at. And then to your point, you know, what can be outsourced? What should I hold on to? But as you're firing yourself and you're getting down to those last couple hats, you got to actually then start to understand what your true talents are. How are you able to really identify, you know, this is really what I am, you know, put on this earth to do?
That's a great, you know, that's a great one. I've struggled with this, and I'm still learning as I grow and to test and try new things. So for me, there came a period early on in Soul Group where, you know, I said, hey, here's a couple of things that just feel, they just don't feel right. Like, I know I'm not doing the best job, but I'm doing them to keep this business going. You know, I actually spent a lot of time asking friends, family, you know, mentors, hey, out of everything that I do, you know, what are some things that you really feel like I excel at? And, you know, I think that there's a humility. You've got to really be humble to say, hey, I'm not good at everything. There's probably like one or two things that I really excel at. Let me do the deep work. Let me, you know, and it went through a period of self-study, like reading books, listening to a ton of podcasts, you know, and like doing StrengthsFinder to make sure that I could uniquely understand what I am, you know, best at. So from there, you know, it became to let me set up a business. And for me, it's teaching and you know, I love speaking and mentoring. So let me restructure my business in a way that allows me to spend most of my day doing those things. And let me say, it's not perfect. There are some times I get caught into fire drills or this, that, and the other, you know, that it's my responsibility, you know, as a business owner to make sure that those things get resolved. But at the end of the day, it's how can I continue to come back to, how can the things at the top of my list, my top three things to do of the day, be those things that I feel like I'm the best at. And then also you get a gut feeling. Like, I know that when I am doing things that I'm just not equipped to do, like I feel tired, irritated, you know, I wake up and I'm like, ugh, you know, looking at my list, just feeling super, you know, just annoyed at those things.
Yeah. And I think that's the killer, right? Because in that moment of tired, irritable, annoyed, people will say, what's wrong with me? I need to suck it up. Clearly I'm just being lazy or entitled or spoiled. And it's like, oh my God, no. I mean, maybe, I guess if you're doing what you love and you don't feel like you should have to work 10-hour days, 12-hour days, well, you've got a problem. But if you're really like irritated looking at your schedule because it's not what you want to be doing, there's a difference between spending a lot of hours at something, which is critical, and noticing your reaction to it, right? And that's such important information. And I think, right, to me, that's where you get that final answer of, okay, my inner wisdom is telling me which direction to really point the compass.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that there's a shame in saying, hey, you know, this is really frustrating to me. I feel like I'm not supposed to be doing this, that, or the other. You know, the reason why a lot of big corporations, they have so many people, so many threads of people, and you can say what you want to say, but you know, when we really get down to the core of it, certain people are great at certain things. So you cannot feel shame in saying, hey, I want to be working on things that I feel like will allow me to contribute the most to this world, that will allow me to really step into my value and touch other people in a really impactful way. To me, you are doing more of a disservice by staying in this place of struggle, by staying in this place of angst, by, you know, trying to power through things that you have no business doing, versus saying, hey, there's someone out there that will crush it at sending out, you know, our invoices. Let me allow them to, you know, have their day in the sun, you know, so yes, they can add value in that way, versus me being frustrated. Like, you have no time to be frustrated. You know, that's so much wasted energy. Figure out a way to get someone on board that can do it well, that will be happy doing it, you know, so that you can go out and do what you're supposed to do. The world needs more people doing what they're supposed to do, you know, so that you are living an impactful life.
In, you know, buried in each one of your sentences, I hope the listeners are hearing this, because in my experience, there's so many critical perspectives that you are sharing. And I don't know that it's as obvious, but just something like that somebody has a day in the sun. What I hear you saying is your ego is not in the way of feeling there's something wrong with you and having shame that there's something wrong with you, that you're not good at sending out invoices or you're not particularly motivated to do it. And I mean, the truth is, I am terrible at some of these T-crossing, I-dotting exercises. I'm meticulous in getting work done, but there's filling out an invoice, for example, I will get it wrong. So somebody else out there will crush that. And you can either see it as your failure, like, I'm truthfully not good at it, or you can see it as their day in the sun. And that's such a, like, don't you think that is the, like, mindset shift that you have to have?
Yes. Yes. And I think you said something, you said, you know, talking about ego. And I think that a lot of times what stifles growth in a business is the business owner's or the founding team's ego being in the way, saying, hey, we had the business idea, we're, you know, we hustled and, you know, put our nose to the grind to get to this place. We do everything and we do it faster, better, you know, so on and so forth. So you hold on to a lot of control because that's the way that you feel like you're having value. When in fact, and there's this great quote, and I'm terrible at remembering like who says things, but they were talking about, if you want to go far, you know, you can go by yourself. If you want to go fast, go by yourself. But if you want to go far, you know, you really need a group or a team. So you've got to get, you know, step away from this place of, I need to do everything. You know, and I think that there's like this, almost like this, you know, kind of like stimulation, like almost like this jolt that if you're doing a bunch of tasks, you're being productive. You know, when I like to think about things in terms of, you know, revenue and results. So if I'm stuck doing a task that someone would be happy at $30, $40 an hour doing, and I could go out and bring, you know, another, let's say, you know, $1 million to the business, if I were freed from those tasks by networking, speaking, and teaching, those are the things that I love and excel to do, it would be actually insane for me to be spending time doing those, you know, $30, $40 an hour tasks in and being upset about doing them, why don't I allow someone else, you know, get my ego out of the way of saying like, oh, I've crossed off this list of 20 things, you know, but those 20 things really made me frustrated and angry and I didn't even do them well.
Yeah.
You can think about if you are focusing on those activities that actually add value, you can grow a bigger team. You can have a bigger business. You can touch more people, teach more people, you know, start the nonprofit that you've always wanted to start because your time is freed up in that way.
Yes. And if you're the type of entrepreneur, I mean, you're a classic CEO who is networking and selling. Some CEOs are the, you know, visionary types of product and they are able to like, you know, see the thing that nobody sees and they're ahead of, you know, the game or they can bring it all together. Well, in those situations, you're really well served to bring a co-founder in who sells or you have a sales team. Right. Yeah. So again, like, identifying those skills within yourself as the leader and then making sure that these other components, you know, if you're not a sales-based leader, incentivizing a really insanely sales motivated person to go out and you give them, you know, a great incentive package so that they can bring in millions of dollars so you can get this done. Another great thing instead of saying, oh, I should be the one out there. It's my name, it's my face, but I'm just terrible at sales, right?
Right. Exactly. And there are some things that I think that as a business, like sales is one of those things. I hear a lot of entrepreneurs and founders say, oh, I don't like sales, or like, you know, my business would be so successful if there were, you know, if I could sell. And it's like, well, you know, I really do think of like sales as your oxygen mask. Any problem that companies, you know, that I've ever heard a company have, it typically comes down to, you know, profit margins and you know, their sales. You know, are you making enough sales? Are you hitting those quotas? Do you have the fuel to sustain the business? You know, so if that is a hindrance for you, you know, I think that there's some things that any entrepreneur you need to be able to articulate and, you know, sell your vision into other people that can help you sell it. So at least master that part in your own way. And then, yeah, invest in someone, give them, you know, a commission to bring you the business, partner with them, make it exciting, you know, for them. So that way you're able to actualize your vision.
Yeah. I think you're adding a great point. I mean, your elevator pitch essentially, right? You have to be able to articulate your business in a way that's compelling. And if you can't, hire again. There's people who write the best copy, right? Like, so
exactly. Oh, exactly.
If you're okay at it, my brother and I ran a company together, and I'm like, I was, you know, working on 100 projects, and he was the one who would, you know, work on that word that we would use to perfectly pitch the company. And he'd walk by and he'd say, "Do you like the word decision support?" And I'm like, "Is that all you do? You just hit and you're, and." But it's so hard, right? It's so hard to like nail that stuff. But you know, you get people to do that stuff for you. Again, to your point, leverage that stuff out. Don't let it get in your way.
Don't let it get in your way. And you can, you know, move faster, further, you know, if you just step out of your own way, you know?
So as a woman and as a business, as a serial entrepreneur, and you've been in corporate, another pushback point that people make is that, you know, I don't want to bother people. I don't want to leverage somebody else because they're not going to respect me as a leader. You know, I don't know how to find good people, right? Like there's all these answers to your point. How do you think about this concept in a way so that, you know, again, you don't get in your own way and not make it happen?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the things is you look at a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, people who have these billion-dollar businesses, you know, they got to where they are by asking. And I think that there is actually one of the most powerful things that you can do is to ask for help, you know, and say to yourself, hey, I don't have all of the answers. So this is this, you know, kind of the same thread of humility, saying like, hey, I need someone to help me do these 10 tasks, is saying, you know, hey, I don't have all the answers. Someone else out there does. So let me, you know, allow them to show up in my life and to help me get to the next level. Because when you allow someone to help you, when you make that big ask, you are allowing someone else to, you know, kind of impart their wisdom. And that very much, I believe that very much is a part of why they were put here. You know, they've amassed this knowledge through experiences, you know, through trials and tribulations. So if they can share that with you, help someone else not make the same mistakes that they did, that's a very powerful, feel-good thing for another person. And what I find is that people have this fear of looking, like looking bad or looking dumb or silly or, you know, oh, I've got to know everything. I am always very skeptical of someone who, you know, purports to know everything because there's just no way. I respect people who say, hey, I don't know, but I think I can find someone that does know, you know, because it shows a level of thinking, but, you know, it shows a level of collaboration and self-awareness, you know, that you have to be a successful entrepreneur, business owner, whatever you're working on or trying to do, you know. So it's again, that mindset shift of, if I want to get to where I want to go, if I feel like this is this value that I want to create in the world, I'm going to have to ask. And yeah, I may look silly. You know, I've asked questions in meetings where, you know, I didn't know something and I completely look stupid. You know, but at the end of the day, I'd rather look stupid and be able to move forward, you know, look stupid and have someone spend 10 minutes explaining something to me so then I can spend the next 10 hours being productive versus, you know, feeling like I'm, you know, this soldier that has to know everything and have the steely face. When that is not absolutely, you know, absolutely, that is not the fact. People do respect people who ask for help and ask questions. That's the only way that you can learn is, you know, through the wisdom and knowledge from other people.
I love it. And you're making me really think about something I've never thought about before. And tell me what you think about this. But at the beginning, as an entrepreneur, the definition is what we've been saying, right? You scrap, you get it done. You're right. Basement, right. Like everybody right. has, right? There's that Silicon Valley show now, and you're like living in squalor. Yes. But the idea is I should do it all. But I think what I'm just realizing as we're talking, yes, you're doing it all at a B minus. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You're just B-. Like, yeah, right? Like you're just getting it off
sometimes
the ground.
A D. Yeah.
Sometimes a D, right? But it's like, okay, I one time had to take a computer apart and put it back together. Lord help me. It was a disaster. I did it. It's not pretty and I shouldn't be doing it. So I think at the beginning, it's like, can I just be scrappy enough to get something to, you know, function and get off the ground, and sort of this really low level B minus to D plus, like you said, I just can't epically fail. And then you start giving it away to other people to start getting like A pluses everywhere. And that's what builds and scales the business. So in fact, as an entrepreneur, you're really not supposed to do it all just at that beginning phase and not well.
This you hit the nail on the head. And this is actually how I built every single business. So I've gotten to the point where, you know, anything that I launch or work on, absolutely, I do it to like a C level, to be frank. And it's not for us, you know, it's not to be, you know, flippant or to be, you know, callous. It's just because honestly, for most things, when it comes to graphic design, I'm not a great graphic designer. I can do a couple images just to get the landing page moving, you know, so that when I go to pitch the idea, which is what I'm great at, we've got something to at least validate. So, you know, as an entrepreneur, your goal is validation. Your goal is validation and to get the first couple paying clients in the door. Then after that, you need a well-oiled machine. You need to go from, you know, like janky basement bicycle to Ferrari really quick. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, you're not operating a Ferrari level on every single thing. There's just no possible way, you know. So that is, to me, that is the best way to build businesses. But a lot of people are afraid to do that. They're afraid to do something, put something kind of crappy out there, you know, in order to get started. Like, look at the first, if you go back and look at the first couple iterations of Amazon.com, it looked terrible. Like, it was a bunch of ugly, janky links on a page. And, you know, it anyone that saw it was probably like, this kind of looks, you know, looks like a scam website at this point, you know. And look at how many people they have now who are best in class, who are top of the top, who Jeff Bezos was able to, you know, convince to come along on his journey to help him build a better product. And that's the mindset, you know, that you've got to have in order to really build a big successful business.
Yeah, 100%. I just launched another business for my partner, and we slapped up an ugly, horrible, awful page. Just for proof of principle, you know, but people purchased and we got people, and it's like, okay, the product has value. People want it. Now let's start to invest, right? But we're investing a small amount to see if like it's the right type of investment, right? So I think that iterative process of, you know, you don't want to put in all of the money and then wake up and realize, oh my God, I missed the mark and I'm broke.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which I did my first business. Like I spent so much money, time, energy on trying to build the perfect product. I had to have the flashiest, most beautiful website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't do the validation and I went broke. I had the beautiful launch party. And come to find out, the product was terrible. No one really wanted it. And, you know, that was a true, humbling moment for me.
Yeah.
You don't know. You may think you have this maverick idea and you're, it's like mwahaha in your basement. Until someone pays you a dollar, you have no idea if it's going to work. So, I do the same. I literally just use WordPress now for ideas that I'm vetting and try to get it up ASAP. And, the first thing I'm doing, I'm picking up the phone to call people and say, hey, here's what I've got. You know, what do you think? Are you going to pay for this? And that's right. That is proof.
And that's the thing too. People say they're going to pay, but until you get that first dollar, right? Like people, when they really take their credit card out and pay you, then you actually know if this is viable.
Exactly. I think one of the most powerful things you can do is to integrate like Stripe or PayPal on your website right away.
That's right.
Right away. Take pre-orders, whatever you've got to do to get someone, the psychological barriers for someone to pull out their credit card. I mean, it's really a huge, huge barrier to engagement. So if you can get someone to go to their wallet or purse, pull out their credit card, buy your product, you're onto something.
Yep. I was at a dinner party and I was thinking about coaching and I wasn't sure I wanted to. And I said, I'm thinking about doing this coaching thing. And two people at the dinner party were like, if you're coaching, I'm in. And I'm like,
Right. Write me a check. Okay, let's go.
All right. Then I must be onto something here if you guys are already, and they meant it and they were like taking a checkbook out. So I love it. So tell me now you have an 8-week academy, you're teaching. Can you tell the audience what's your latest system and.
Sure. So, I'd say at Salt Group, I think about really my role at Salt these days is like the leader of the lab. So we're always testing things and trying different things. And, I started off as a traditional agency, taking on clients. And, what I realized it was, for me to have impact and for this business to have impact that we needed to think through different models. So what we're doing right now is we've launched a training program through Salt.io, and our idea and what we've been doing is actually training companies to, build a culture of growth into their marketing and their product development. So going from these siloed marketing, product development, engineering, roles in an organization to say, okay, hey, how can we implement these growth cycles in order to really measure and to understand what specifically drives ROI when we're launching marketing campaigns, we're implementing viral loops into our software or app or whatever we're working on. So the training is allowing us to scale, to touch more companies, more people, and to really shift the conversation in marketing from being just about top of the funnel and brand awareness style campaigns to saying, hey, actually, every step in this organization is marketing, from the way that customer service, answers to phone all the way down to, how we are upselling within the app. Those are all marketing touch points, and let's have a system in order to methodically test and iterate in order to get the best response and to drive the most revenue. So, we're doing that training, and I recently launched another company. So again, like tinkering and hacking and figuring out, the best ways to build businesses. So, one of the things that was important for me is that, I was dealing with a chronic condition and was looking for, alternative ways to heal myself, and like really struggled online, like on these like back end websites, looking for naturopaths and, holistic health providers, like looking on Yelp to read reviews. And it became a really disjointed process. So, what I did was lean and mean, launch a new company called Blisswell. And Blisswell is, something I've been putting some time into as we've been, trying to grow our database and network. And pretty much it's like ZocDoc for holistic health. So we're connected with providers across a variety of different disciplines and can simply book appointments with them based on their real-time availability. So making it easier for people who want to take that alternative health route to just quickly get in to visit the right person for them. So those are the two things, the training training and, you know, building Blisswell. And, you know, it's been, the agency has been such a wonderful platform for me to be this like mad lab scientist and test and launch things. And, you know, now I have a team that supports in, you know, getting those things off the ground. But I, you know, hey, I still do, you know, some of that initial, you know, I would say back end work just to get the idea off the ground, you know, before I even put my team on it, you know, to make sure that I'm using resources in the right way.
Well, you are an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. I love it. You, I can't believe how many things at 32 you've launched and successfully grown. If anybody's looking to find out more about you, more about your company, where can they find you?
Yeah, sure. My website, Teju TV, has the latest and greatest. And then I'm on all social networks at Teju_TV.
And that's so, T-E-J-U.
Of T-J-U, yes.
And anything, any of these links will be on my website as always. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your
you.
Tips and ideas for the listeners.
Such a pleasure. Anytime.